Be opening to Genesis 6, if you would, please. Genesis chapter 6. And Mark there, if you remember last week as we were closing, we were talking about the flood, and I talking about the gravity of sin. It was one of the last bullet points on our outline. And I said I wanted to kind of pick up there tonight. So Mark in Genesis chapter 6. And let's go to the little book of Habakkuk. One of your minor prophets. Habakkuk chapter 1 for just a second. Habakkuk is a question asker. Somebody read the first four verses of this book, please. He's doing his work approximately 600 BC. So right during the time of the three invasions of Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar against Judah, southern Israel, and Jerusalem. And, essentially it's like, God, what are you waiting for? Well, then you have a response to that beginning in verse 5, that he's going to send the Chaldeans. I'm surrounded by all this wickedness in my own nation. What are you going to do about it? Well, that's just it. I'm going to send the Chaldeans. And they're going to make judgment. They're going to be God's instrument of judgment against his own people for their sin. Okay? Somebody read verses 12 and 13. Because this is Habakkuk's response to that. Well, Habakkuk's struggling here. And you notice he refers to him as my Holy One in verse 12. That's kind of what I want us to think about. You have purer eyes than to behold evil. That doesn't mean that God doesn't see evil, can't look at it. I've even heard some people say, well, that's why he turned his back when Jesus was on the cross, because he couldn't look at all that evil. That's just foolish. That's a ridiculous argument. I mean, and I say it that way because whose plan was it for Jesus to go to the cross? God's plan. So you're telling me then that God turned his back on his own plan. That's what you're telling me. I've heard preachers use that to tell a very emotional story. I was listening to one preacher one time, and he was preaching to youth. And I've seen this over the years, how they can be very manipulative and stir emotions. And this preacher was crying, telling this story of how God turned his back on his own son and how terrible that is. And that's just error. That's why he should be upset. He's teaching something that's false. God sees evil. Why do you think he judges it? Well, because he's holy and because he knows what's going on. And so Habakkuk is struggling with, I'm surrounded, my own people are like this. Well, I'm going to send the Chaldeans, and they're going to be the judges. They're going to purge my people from their sin. Well, when are you going to do that? That's essentially verses 12 to 14. How long are you going to wait before you do it? So we're here in Genesis chapter 6. The end of all flesh has come before God's eyes. Well, that seems a bit, the way we might rationalize, that seems a bit harsh. I mean, sure, you know, Noah stands out, obviously, but surely not everybody was that bad. And, you know, God, surely, it's that bad. It's that bad. Every thought of man's heart was only evil continually. It's that bad. And what are the wages of sin? Death. The wages of sin is death. And so we reach this point in human history, as we've been talking about, the earth's population is growing, and along with the growth of population, more humans comes more sin. And so that's why we have this, what we call Noah's flood, a universal event that affects, well, everything that has the breath of life within it. Somebody read for us Genesis chapter 6, verses 8 through 12, please. Okay, so you have a reiteration of the situation here. This is why the flood is coming. So the first bullet point there, which I think is important for us to always remember, is that God's people can live faithfully under any circumstance. Again, we've traced from the end of chapter 4 the descendants of Cain, the descendants of Seth. In those days, men started to call upon the name of the Lord. You see that divergence. People going in different directions, morally, spiritually. There's no justification for God's people falling in line with culture. You know, just fitting in or however you want to say it. It doesn't matter what circumstance you find yourself in as a Christian, you can still be a Christian. Period. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. The account of the flood, and I put in quotation or parentheses here, and this comes from both 1 Peter chapter 3 and 2 Peter chapter 2, God's judgment on the world of the ungodly, and particularly there, 2 Peter chapter 3, and we may look at something here in just a minute in that chapter, but is a clear display of the interplay, okay, I-N-T-E-R-P-L-A-Y, the interplay between grace, faith, and works. There are people who will tell us that, and you've heard me talk about this, you're saved by grace. That's true. But you're not saved by grace alone. You're saved by faith. That's true. You're not saved by faith alone. And you're saved by works, and that's true, but you're not saved by works alone. But there are those who would try to isolate one of those. And in fact, I watched a debate the other night. It was about 2 hours and 50 minutes between a preacher for the Lord's Church in Texas and a Reformed theology preacher in Jonesboro. They actually had the debate in Jonesboro at that guy's church building. And, of course, it was the same old Calvinistic Reformed theology idea that you're saved by grace alone through faith alone. Well, that's a whole lot of alone. Anyway, the account of the flood is a clear display of the interplay between grace, faith, and works. Why was Noah saved? Okay, there's one answer. That's one right answer. Because he did what God told him to do. Somebody else give me another right answer. God saw him as just. God's grace. His faith and works. And you've got multiple passages that address this. Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Okay, he did what was right. Did what God told him to do. By faith, Noah prepared an ark to the saving of his household. Hebrews chapter 11. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Noah was a just man and perfect. Noah walked with God. There's not any one of those things alone that saved him. There's not one of those things that you could single out, and Noah was only saved by the grace of God. God, Noah, up to that point in time, God could have looked down and he could have seen Noah as the text describes him here in verse 9. He's just, perfect, walked with God. And he could have said, all right, Noah, here's what's going to happen. I want you to build an ark. Now that's grace. But Noah could have said, hey, I am just perfect and I'm walking with you. I don't really feel that I need to build an ark. I think you'll take care of me. What good is faith if it has not works, according to James chapter 2? I believe in God, I believe what He says about me, but I think God will just take care of me. Because that's the perception that a lot of people have about being a child of God today. I'm not that bad of a person. You know, relatively speaking, I'm pretty good. God is gracious. I don't need to go to church. I don't need to, you know, associate with any kind of religious institution. Well, good luck with all that. It's never worked that way. Noah, there's no question he's saved by grace. The interplay, you're saved by grace through faith. Well, faith can mean a couple of different things. It can certainly mean trust. It can mean belief. Just, you know, the mental side of it. I believe that God exists. But it can also involve your works, and that's what James chapter 2 is all about. If a man says he has faith and has not works, James asks the question, Can faith save him? And what James is asking there is, can that kind of faith save him? What's the answer to that? Well, of course not. You can say you have faith, but if you don't have works, it's meaningless. So we have to be able to understand, and maybe even to our friends or somebody we're talking to, articulate the relationship between all of these, grace, faith, and works. And I guess you could even add in there with works the word law, because God is very specific with what he wants Noah to do here. Were there any other saved people before the flood? Well, we know of at least one. We know Enoch. He walked with God and God took him. To answer the question about the direct connection with the flood, I would take you to 1 Peter 3. 8 souls were saved in the flood. And we know those 8. Noah, his wife and their kids and in-laws, daughters-in-law. So that tells me that nobody else was saved. I don't know. If Noah and his family were saved because of how Noah is described, then I would say by implication, no. Nobody else was. Yeah. Why would he? Well, there's a Bible passage that says, what is this, in relation to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah? I'm thinking of, will you destroy the righteous with the unrighteous? Well, of course not. It was wholly corrupt. Yeah. Oh, okay. The word before there, the earth was corrupt before God. In other words, it's in His presence, in His observance of it, it's corrupt. Yeah, I say, yeah. That's true. Oh yeah, Matthew 24. They were marrying, giving in marriage. Yeah, they were definitely. Well, that would be comparable to God's judgment on Nineveh with Jonah. What was it, 120,000 who didn't know their right hand from their left? Sometimes the innocent do die in the punishment of the wicked. There's no question about that. But in terms of the salvation of, I don't know, the age of accountability, I see 8 people being saved by water. The righteous being destroyed with the unrighteous, yeah. Yeah, Lot asked to go to this certain place, and in the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, it's, if I'm not mistaken, there were, it's either 4 or 5 cities that were destroyed. But the righteous fled, and whatever was left behind was not. And then wherever they went was obviously spared. But for the sake of, I would say probably for the sake of the righteous ones that were there. Yes, I think, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and we touched on that last week. There were 100, and I'm not going to strive with man forever. The time allotted is 120 years. And so then you connect that with 2 Peter 2, where verse 5, where he's called a preacher of righteousness. 1 Peter 3, verses 18 and 19, where it talks about Noah, through the Spirit, preached to those who were in prison. Well, those who were in prison, he didn't go to a jailhouse and preach to prisoners. He preached to those who were captive to sin, seemingly the whole time he's building the ark. Well, that's what Job brought up. Even in those days, they were marrying, giving it. They were going about their normal life. Noah's preaching righteousness. He's building the ark, and God's no respecter of person. You put all that together, and 8 people were saved by water, which tells me that there were about 8 people who were just and walking with God. Yeah, Yeah, sometimes instead of the word saved, we use that word safe. They don't have the mental capacity to walk with God. But yeah. Somebody asked a question on here of, they saw an article on the internet about all flesh was corrupt. Does that include the animals in terms of immorality? Well, I know that there are people who believe that, but no, animals were not created in the image of God. Animals are not accountable to God. They're not going to stand before God in judgment. So, anyway, the flood was the judgment of God in that time against the world of the ungodly. So over in 2 Peter chapter 3, and I mentioned this in that little parenthetical statement, God's judgment on the ungodly world. Over in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 5, for this they willingly are ignorant, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, the earth that was standing out of the water and in the water, by which that world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. And it was for the, and those who were, well, the earth that is now preserved by the same word are reserved for the fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. Well, that was part of what was destroyed, or that was what was destroyed in Noah's flood, the world of ungodly men. And so, eight souls were saved by water. I go back to that answer again. The return of Christ has never happened, has it? So far as we have recorded in the Bible, you know, when God created the world, it had not rained. He caused a mist to rise up from the ground, you know, condensation. Probably, again, and we're going to get into this as we get into chapter 7 and 8 and the description of the flood itself. Probably the entire earth was a tropical paradise. And it seems that, what's the word I'm looking for? Not archaeology. I guess you'd say geology to some extent, the study of rocks. Geology has shown, even in the heights of the Rockies and in the Swiss Alps, ferns, you know, what you would find in a humid, hot environment are fossilized. Well, that had to come at some point in time. So, anyway, somebody... Well, what happened to the innocent children? So I want to think about that for just a minute. When God sent King Saul against the Amalekites, what did he tell Saul to do? 1 Samuel chapter 15. Kill them all. What does all mean? I mean he described it. Animals, everything. Wipe them out. Utterly destroy them. Okay? What about the innocent children? What? How can God be just? Because, you know, Genesis 18:25, Sodom and Gomorrah, the judge of the earth will do what's right. How can God be just and authorize something like that to happen? Okay. Those children coming up, we as humans, surely there's a way to save them. You know, we are so much more compassionate than God, aren't we? And so much more wise. We got, you know, we could handle it a lot better than, you know, those kids. Well, this is Genesis chapter 15, when God told Abraham that you're going to get a land, but your descendants are going to be slaves for 400 years, and then I'm going to bring them back because the sin of the Amorites is not yet full. The Gentile nations. God gave them 400 years. You know, one thing that we learn in 2 Peter chapter 3 as well is that the long-suffering of God is salvation. How much time did these people have to listen to Noah, the preacher of righteousness? And eight souls were saved by water, and that was just his family. God's long-suffering, His patience, His grace runs out. It comes to an end. If you allow those children to come up in that environment, what are they going to become? Well, they're going to become just like their parents are. Would it be more merciful to let them live and have a long life here on earth and burn for eternity? Or to allow a group of people to suffer in war and to die, and for those who are not, again, mentally capable of obeying God, knowing His law, to die at a young age? And it's like Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven, well, if you want to enter into the kingdom of heaven, you got to become like little children. Which is more just? What were you going to say, Tammy? Oh. Yeah. This is something important to talk about, because this is where, again, Bible skeptics, agnostics, atheists, this is where they, you know, your God is a, you know, He's a genocidal maniac, egotistical. It's all about Him. You know, He's a jealous God, and He killed all these children throughout the Old Testament. He's just a, why would you want to serve a God like that? Instead of looking at it from the scriptural perspective of, okay, God is just and long-suffering, and He's given them centuries of exposure to His Word through His own people, and yet they maintain their ways. It's kind of like Romans chapter 1 talks about, that everything that can be known of God, even His eternal power and Godhead, is clearly seen by the things that are created. And yet, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And so God gave them up. He says that three times. God gave them up, and gave them over to a reprobate mind. It's Romans 1, 24, 26, and 28. So it's often looked at from the wrong perspective, because I would have handled that differently. That's, you know, like I said, we humans are so much more wise than God is. We would have found a better way to handle it, I'm sure. Oh, definitely, yeah, child sacrifice, yeah. Well, and even the Israelite kings, Manasseh particularly, child sacrifice, I mean, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, he wouldn't have been extending the five steps of salvation, as we call it, would he? Obviously, because you couldn't have faith in Christ at that time. But to me, it's kind of like Jonah, yet 40 days in Nineveh shall be destroyed. Now, I'm going to take from that he probably said more than just those eight words. It's kind of like Philip went down to the city of Samaria and preached Christ unto them. There's a lot to what that preaching was. What do what now? To Noah? Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. That God... Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3 real quick. Since we keep bringing it up, and by we, I mean me. 2 Peter chapter 3. And I want somebody to read... Nope, I'm sorry. It's 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. And I want somebody to read 18 through 20. We are not going to finish this outline tonight. Okay, stop right there. You're reading from a King James Version, and you notice it says, by which. And the first two words of verse 19 are, by which. What's the last phrase of verse 18 again? Okay, made alive by the Spirit, by whom? That the reason the King James put the word which there, which is a neuter noun, is because the word Spirit is a neuter. It's neither masculine nor feminine. It's neuter. And so when you see the word Spirit or ghost in the King James, a lot of times it'll be followed by a neuter What am I looking for? Noun, pronoun, something like that. Which or it, something like that. So here's what it says in the New King James. Jesus was made alive by the Spirit by whom? All right, now keep reading. Okay. Now, when you couple 2 Peter 2:5 with this, you know who was doing the preaching. If you only had 1 Peter 3:8, it sounds like Jesus was there preaching. But that's why you put all the verses together. That's why you study your Bible this way, that you don't just isolate one passage to the neglect of another. So Noah did the preaching through the same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead. That's again, and that's why I had Kim stop there at the end of verse 18. Jesus was made alive by the Spirit by whom Noah preached to those spirits who were in prison. And in prison, well, they were in prison to sin. And then notice this, you have this word when in verse 20, who formerly were disobedient, when, that tells us when the preaching was done, when the long suffering of God was waiting. While the ark was being prepared. So you know who was doing the preaching. It was Noah, 2 Peter 2:5. You know how he was preaching, by the Spirit. And you know that it was being done while the ark was being prepared, wherein only 8 souls were saved by water. All that makes sense? Yes. Well, let's read it. By whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison. So it, and the he for me there is capitalized. Is it for you? Is it in, it's not? Okay. Yeah. Well, that's why you have to deal with 2 Peter 2:5. Somebody turn over to read 2 Peter 2:5 for us. Yeah, the world of the ungodly. Who was the preacher of righteousness, Marcia? Noah. Okay. Doing it by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. The whole time the ark was being prepared while the long-suffering of God was waiting. But the long-suffering of God runs out. You're either going to do what he says or not, or you're not. And, well, when you're not, there's judgment. I'm sorry? I believe so. The New King James does that. I don't know. And some other English versions do that in multiple places. It's basically a translator's preference, you might say, in that particular text. All right. Where were we? No, okay. The third bullet point. You got two blanks here. Noah was just, that's your first one. And the word just, well, what does that mean? Well, it means he was righteous because of conformity to a given standard. That's the fundamental definition of what it means to be righteous. Sometimes in your English Bibles, you'll see the word just. Like, where does it talk about Lot? Is that in 2 Peter 2? It talks about just Lot. And it doesn't mean only Lot, it means righteous Lot. Let me find that real quick. I think, is it? Okay, read that. 2 Peter 2:7. Okay. Yeah, the King James says he delivered just Lot. Well, righteous. So sometimes in your English version, you'll see the word just. Sometimes you'll see the word righteous. It's the same word. And it means that whoever that person is has conformed to the standard that's been given by God. So Noah was just and perfect, blameless, complete, without blemish. That word perfect is also used specifically in connection with the Old Testament sacrifices, that they had to be without blemish. That doesn't mean they were sinless animals. It means they were perfect, without blemish. Nothing was wrong with them. You can be perfect today. In fact, Matthew 5:48, where Jesus is talking about loving your enemies and being like God. He says, be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Well, then you can never sin. And if you do, well, that's too bad because you got to be perfect. It's not what that word means. All right, notice, and this is important too. Next bullet point. Notice that the earth had corrupted, and I put it in quotes, his way. Verse 12. God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. Okay, so what? What does that mean? Well, there is no connection to the sin of Adam. Your next two blanks. The verse doesn't say, and God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had been corrupted through original sin from Adam. For that doctrine to be true, which most of your religious world holds to, most of your denominational friends, their churches, now they individually may not believe this, but their, let's say their religious institution believes in original sin, sinful nature, corrupt nature. The Bible, if that were true, if that doctrine were true, the Bible would have to consistently say something like that. For all flesh had been corrupted because of sin inherited from Adam or because of original sin, something like that. But that's just not... Yeah. I can look real quick on my Bible app and see what if it's like plural or singular, but it's saying the same thing. Let me see here, verse 12. The earth and corrupt flesh, his way. It's actually a singular noun, his way. But perhaps because of the language around it, that's why the New King James did it. All flesh had corrupted their way. I don't know. Can't say that for sure. Whatever the case may be, everybody was corrupt. Now somebody read verse 22, Genesis 6. And I guess this is where we'll close it. All right, so Noah's pattern of being righteous and perfect, or just and perfect, continued. The announcement of the flood, the construction of the ark, which we didn't even get to. None of that changed him, which tells me you can live faithfully under any circumstance. All right, anything else before we stop? Absolutely, we do. That Romans chapter 2 talks about that, in fact. Romans chapter 2 talks about the Gentiles under the old law. You know, they weren't given the Ten Commandments. Deuteronomy 5 tells us that the Ten Commandments were given to the children of Israel at the Mount Sinai. And Romans 2, and I think it's verses 14 and 15, talks about the Gentiles who don't have the law, but they have the law written on their hearts. It's like there are some things that you know are wrong inherently. So if we're talking about the Ten Commandments, and I've said this before, murder was wrong before the Ten Commandments came along. And adultery and stealing and all that was wrong. So it's kind of like the book of Ecclesiastes says, if you remember when we went through that on Sunday nights a while back, God put, one of the things that it said, and I think it's in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, is that God put eternity in their hearts. There is something within us that only God can fill. And everybody has that. Yeah. Yes. I think conscience is the right word. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you.